This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello, welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. I'm Carol Van Dam, and here's what's coming up.
The Malian government has decided to sever the ties with MINUSMA for all kinds of reasons. It doesn't mean that the Malians should be left alone.
That was Joseph Sani, vice president at the Africa Center of the U.S. Institute of Peace, saying the world should not abandon Mali after the U.N. Security Council voted to withdraw peacekeepers from Mali. Also, Sudanese and South Sudanese Catholic bishops urged the international community to stop Sudan's conflict. And the French brace for more rioting after the fatal police shooting of a teenager. All this and more coming up on Africa News Tonight. The UN Security Council voted unanimously today to terminate the mandate of the UN Multidimensional Integrated Stabilization Mission in Mali, known as MINUSMA, after the military government there asked it to leave 2 weeks ago. The withdrawal begins this Saturday and will continue through the rest of the year to allow for an orderly withdrawal and safe drawdown of its personnel. I spoke to Joseph Sani, vice president of the Africa Center of the United States Institute of Peace, who says the Malian government wants the UN troops gone as soon as possible.
For multiple reasons, the Malian government has decided to sever the ties with MINUSMA for all kinds of reasons. It doesn't mean that the Malians should be left alone, or it doesn't mean that the international community or African neighbors should close their doors to the Malians. Because I always compare the Sahel to a house. You cannot think that you can close the room when the house is burning or one room is burning. You close the door and that's it. No. If you don't take care of that fire, the whole house will burn down.
Right. So but at the same time, it's not lost on the Security Council that government restrictions have crippled air and ground operations ever since Mali partnered with the Russian mercenary group Wagner in 2021. So is the UN just kind of tired of being at odds with the government there, and are they ready to leave?
I think it's not that they are tired. I think the UN did everything. The special representative of the Secretary General was conciliatory. The UN tried to work with the Malian government, but there was just, we cannot forget the impact that the Moura report, the human rights report, had on that relationship. I think the Moura report, we have to remember, the UN investigation uncovered human rights abuses that were committed allegedly by the Malian government and their partner. And so that report, I think, was the trigger of this whole story, even though the trust level was already extremely low. The work environment was becoming very, very restrictive for the MINUSMA. There were so many conditions, so many constraints put on MINUSMA by the Malian government, to the point where MINUSMA could not, frankly, effectively do its job. And so I think, objectively, that was a logical conclusion. I mean, the writings were on the wall already.
You've got this situation where the Malian government, you know, even though they don't want to see the UN peacekeepers there anymore, they're fighting the Islamist insurgency too. So my question to you is the insurgency as strong today as it was following the uprising in Mali in 2012?
When we follow the numbers of internally displaced people, numbers of dead, casualties, etc., we can say the insurgency, at least the Islamic, the terrorists, have gained ground, frankly. We don't see spectacular attacks as we used to see before, credit to the Malian Defense Forces, but still the insecurity has subsided. No. And so that makes us wonder, will the Malian Defense Force be able to push back terrorists? And let us not forget, MINUSMA was also sort of a guarantor of the Alger peace accord somehow. MINUSMA brought some level of stability and some guarantees. Now that MINUSMA will leave, what will happen with the rebel or the insurgent of the Tuareg rebellion? Nobody knows, right? Because they are also humbling on that side. So the Malian Defense Force may end up fighting a war at multiple fronts.
That is Joseph Sani. He's vice president at the Africa Center of the U.S. Institute of Peace. He was speaking to me earlier today here in Washington. Sudanese and South Sudanese Catholic bishops are urging the international community to stop the fighting in Sudan, saying it has affected thousands of people. Waki Simon Wudu has this report from the South Sudanese capital, Juba.
The Catholic bishops spoke to reporters Friday after their three-day conference in Juba. The Archbishop of the Metropolitan Diocese of Juba, Stephen Ameyu, who spoke on behalf of the Sudan and South Sudanese bishops, says the meeting touched on several issues, including the situation in Sudan. Ameyu says the Catholic Church is worried about the faith of millions of Sudanese caught up in the ongoing fighting between the Sudan Armed Forces and the paramilitary Rapid Support Forces.
We see that a lot of human rights have been violated. There is a lot of killing, looting, and raping, destruction of hospitals, and destruction of several services that are given to human people, but also the destruction of the sources of water, food, and electricity has affected the people of Sudan.
The Archbishop says at least 2,000 people were killed and more than a million others have fled to South Sudan, Egypt, Chad, and Ethiopia. Ameyu is calling on the international community to use appropriate methods for resolving and rein on the military leaders to end the conflict in Sudan through dialogue.
As we experience this setback in Sudan, we must pray for peace and tranquility in Sudan. But also we urge the international body to pressurize the two parties in the conflict in order to bring peace to the people of Sudan.
The church leaders also reminded the government of South Sudan to end violence across the country.
We are aware this revitalized peace agreement has given some glimpse of peace to the people of South Sudan. But we are also aware that there is a stagnation in the implementation of peace. We are aware that the president several times have already mentioned that he will not take the country to war. But to our knowledge, the implementation has been exceptionally very slow.
Ameyu calls on the transitional government of national unity to demonstrate candid political will by implementing the revitalized peace agreement in letter and spirit. For VOA News, Zamwake Simon Wudu in Juba.
Observers of Sierra Leone's election are raising concerns about vote count irregularities in a ballot that declared President Julius Maada Bio's re-election. As the Muslim majority nation marks Islam's Eid al-Adha, the Feast of Sacrifice, there are calls for peace and unity after violence during the polling process left at least one person dead. Sananu Tord has more from Freetown, Sierra Leone.
Sierra Leone's Electoral Commission says Julius Maada Bio won the 2023 presidential election, narrowly capturing victory with 56% of the valid votes. That is just above the 55% needed to avoid a runoff. But national and international observer missions say there are concerns about how the figure was tallied due to a lack of transparency and restricted access to the vote counting process. Marcel Asambasise is the chairperson of the National Election Watch.
Things became a little bit awry and opaque. A number of observer missions could not be able to do the collation as they wished to. A number of National Elections Watch observers at the tally centers equally called attention to access to the process. There were access to observe in some areas, in some regions, because regional tally centers were done, whilst in others, access was very limited.
National Election Watch, or NEW, has been observing Sierra Leone polls since the end of the 11-year civil war in 2002. The group says none of the presidential candidates met the minimum threshold to secure a win. It also questioned the Electoral Commission's voter turnout figures and rejection of ballots it said were inaccurate. The opposition party, All People's Congress, claimed its candidate, Dr. Samura Kamara, won the vote, sparking violence outside its headquarters. Arudu Kamara says he lives nearby.
So the force for dispatch.
Police used force to disperse the people. They started firing tear gas into the crowd. I tried to get closer to see what was happening, but things got tense and the security personnel started firing live bullets into the crowd, so I quickly left the scene.
Political analysts say campaign messages further deepen existing divide. Melvin Tijan Mansari is a political analyst and a former parliamentary correspondent.
Both political parties, both of their candidates were pelting it. If you go to the South and the Southeast, people were using that tribal sentiment of, oh, if you don't vote for us, these people are coming against you. And if you go to the Northwest, people are going to tell you that, oh, you see, we are in opposition and see how we've been treated.
As some families mark the Eid al-Adha, they urge the newly sworn-in president to address the nation for unity. Floyd C. Wright says many are still traumatized from the civil war, and leaders should work to heal and unite the nation.
Come on radio, come on TV, do jingles, try and preach peace. Tomorrow is another day. The other elections will be in 5 years' time. So let's try and deal with the situation we have now in terms of moving the country forward.
Meanwhile, Sierra Leoneans wait to see what legal steps the opposition parties will take and hope to come out united. Sana Anutor for VOA News, Freetown, Sierra Leone.
You're listening to Africa News Tonight. I'm Carol Van Dam in Washington. For more information on these and other stories from the continent, check out voaafrica.com. There you will find all your favorite VOA radio and TV programs and a whole lot more. For world news, check out voanews.com. Human Rights Watch reports that armed men killed at least 20 people this week in the western part of Democratic Republic of Congo. The Human Rights Monitor says fighters from the Mobondo militia ambushed a truck carrying traders from the Teke ethnic group near a village in the Kwamouth region of Mai Ndombe, northeast of the capital, Kinshasa. HRW says the violence is part of a simmering dispute over land and customary claims between so-called native and non-native communities that has killed hundreds of people so far. The conflict escalated when many farmers, mainly from the Yaka ethnic group, rejected an increase in customary royalties that were being charged by the native Teke chiefs. The non-native groups that make up the Mobondo militias attacked the Teke villagers with machetes, spears, hunting rifles, and military assault rifles. Thousands have fled their homes. France is bracing for more unrest tonight. Protests over the fatal police shooting of a teenager rocked France for a third night in a row on Thursday, with cars burned, buildings vandalized, and hundreds arrested in cities across the country. A police officer shot and killed 17-year-old Nahel M. during a traffic stop in the Paris suburb of Nanterre. Nahel is of Algerian and Moroccan descent, and his death has particularly outraged the nation's immigrant community. Journalist Catherine Field is in Nanterre, and she spoke earlier today with our own Kate Pound Dawson.
It's been very tense here most of the day. It was overnight. There was an enormous amount of violence, enormous number of buses, cars set fire, houses were set fire to. It has calmed down. It did calm down during the day, but you get the feeling now that police are expecting more trouble this evening. All the restaurants are starting to close down for the night. A lot of the furniture, outside furniture, is being brought in. And there's just a feeling that despite all the outrage, that the message has still not gotten across, that these demonstrations are really demonstrations calling on the police to show more respect for the community and to understand what it is to live in this community.
This particular death really has struck a very big nerve on the immigrant community in France. There are protests over in many parts of the country. Tell us about why that is.
It was an event which unfortunately happens quite regularly, where police pulled over a young driver for either a security check, a driver's license check, or whatever. It's still not clear. And when they pulled him over, they said in their latest statement that they pulled him over and that he was acting strangely, that they feared for their lives, that he was going to drive into them, and that they shot him when they thought they were in danger. Now, all that went out on the media in France. Then, within a couple of hours, on social media, there was released a video that had been recorded by a passerby that showed the police were not in any danger, that this driver had stopped. They also recorded the scene of the policeman holding a gun inside the window of that car, and the policeman had said to this driver, "I'm going to lodge a bullet in your head." Driver then started to move away. There was a shot. Now, when that video went live, it really just went all over France very quickly. People came out and said, this is exactly what we're dealing with, that the police say one thing, we see something else, that this time we have evidence that the police were not telling the truth.
Now, the pulling over this driver and other young drivers, is that particularly generating anger among the immigrant community? Do they feel that they are more targeted by the police and that the police just gloss over it?
Exactly. When you look at, for example, the figures for last year, 2022 in France, 13 people were killed at police checks and they failed to stop at a traffic police check. Now, the majority of those 13 who were killed were either of North African or African descent. It is way bigger than the portion of the population in retrospect of that. So, yes, they are saying that they are pulled over more often. They are pulled over more often for very simple reasons or for allegations, and that this is part of their daily life. That to a point, you do see them out and about more because they are taking a lot of these hourly paid jobs, whether it's delivery, by bike or by car. They are out and about, but they do say, and there is evidence to show, that they get pulled over more often. And then the other thing that is being said at the moment is we're in these low-income areas where a lot of these people live. There isn't really the investment in the sort of facilities that the more wealthier suburbs get. Education, sports facilities. They said that in these areas, a lot of the money, the state money that goes into it, is for security. And they said, look, they point to this and say, this is what we think that you think of us, that we're only worth having extra security and that we're not worth having better schools, better sports facilities, or even just better facilities all around.
That's journalist Catherine Field in Nanterre, outside Paris, speaking with VOA's Kate Pound Dawson. The French government says more than 800 protesters were arrested last night. There are few signs that government calls to de-escalate the violence, including calls from French leader Emmanuel Macron, will quell the widespread anger. Macron left a European Union meeting earlier to be back in Paris today for a crisis cabinet meeting. He's ordered police reinforcements on the streets and asked towns to halt bus and tram service an hour from now. Macron also called on social media to remove sensitive footage of rioting and to disclose the names of users who incite violence on their platforms. Tanzania's government says it will allow passenger buses to operate 24 hours a day in an effort to stimulate economic growth, ending a ban on nighttime travel introduced in 1990 following hijackings, robberies, and road accidents. Government officials say they have improved poor roads and communications networks, making it easier to track drivers and passenger buses. According to the Citizen Daily newspaper, new rules introduced by the Land Transport Regulatory Authority will require two drivers for each trip that exceeds 8 hours. And a new law will allow the agency to fingerprint drivers, monitor their speed limits, and ban those who drive recklessly. Ama piano music, which emerged in South Africa about a decade ago, now resonates around the world. It's described as a hybrid of house and jazz washed with rich vocals, and it's common these days to see South African ama piano artists on the stages of the globe's biggest music festivals. Darren Taylor reports.
Mm-hmm. The hit Amapiano song Mina Nawe by the artist Soa Matrix. Just one of many South African artists traveling the world performing the genre, from Argentina to Australia, Croatia to Canada. Producer Israel Zulu says Amapiano takes its name from the sharp piano melodies that characterized some of the first examples of the genre. But really, he says, Amapiano is a mix of deep house, acid jazz, and melodic lounge music, using a lot of synthesizers, heavy bass, and acoustic rhythms. It's sometimes very trippy, says Zulu, and unusual for African music. Amapiano's origins are a matter of debate, but Zulu thinks it began around 2012, when more affluent black youngsters in expensive private schools began mixing more traditional South African music like township kwaito with more mainstream genres like jazz. He also describes Amapiano as a rebellion against materialism.
The culture we live in is oppressing us. It makes us to suffer generationally. Then it looks like a generational curse.
Largely because of what Zulu calls South Africa's venal political class and selfish celebrity culture, he says the country's youth are worshipping all the wrong things. He says Amapiano shows South Africans what potential they hold. The music isn't negative, he says. It doesn't worship money and violence.
No matter we can have money, economical transformation, it's useless for us. It's not about economical transformation. It's about cultural transformation. If we can change the way we live, we shall conquer.
He says Amapiano is music of self-respect, not self-loathing.
It's in the mind, it's in our eyes, it's not in the Bible or in the parliament. It's basic skills, how to respect, being clean, pick up a paper from the ground, put it in the dustbin, simple things. Sometimes our life makes us to hate ourselves.
Zulu says the demise of apartheid gave black South Africans the vote, but it didn't liberate them. Now, he says, many are slaves, not to the white man, but to their own greed for power and money.
No one is going to heal us. No one is going to make us better. It's us. We must make our life better. Mentality, black mentality. We must consider ourselves as human beings.
True human beings, says Zulu, are not gangsters and misogynists. Amapiano, he adds, is the sound of South Africa's new humanity, and it will tell you to go to school, not to sit in your car using drugs. For VOA News, I'm Darren Taylor in Johannesburg.
That was very soothing. My producer agrees. And that wraps it up for this edition of Africa News Tonight. I'm Carol Van Damme in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. On behalf of our producer, Mukville Yabaro, and our engineer, Cornelius Chenner, have a peaceful weekend, and thanks for choosing The Voice of America.